Good morning. I'm Free Pod host Alan Wenzel, and I'm conducting this morning's interview with Brian Wenzel and Seth Wenzel of Kentland Farms in Kent, Illinois. And we're going to talk about the fall harvest, gentlemen, and find out a little bit about what's going on in the fields at this time of the year. Before I begin with my questions, Brian, Seth, could you tell us a little bit about your operations, how many acres you farm, what your outputs are, and just tell us a little bit of background on your family business?
So we are basically corn and soybean, a cash grain operation. I started farming in 1976, and at that time we had livestock, and we had hogs and cattle for 20 years, and then converted to strictly cash grain, and now it's corn and soybean production. We have at least four people involved in the operation, three to four different entities. And between all of those people, we farm between 4,000 and 5,000 acres. It's spread over an area from north of Mount Carroll to up to Kent, over through Freeport, and we have a acreage over in Rydott. So we're very spread out. But that's how cash grain works today. You go where you can find the ground, rent the ground, or own the ground. So
that's good background, Brian. Seth, you want to add anything to that?
Sure. So I'm 42 years old. My wife, Shannon, and I moved back to the farm in 2009. So this is about our 15th year being back on the farm. So I work full time with my father, helping raise corn and soybeans.
I noticed, as I'm driving out here, it looks like the beans are pretty well done in the county or in the area. And corn is yet to be done, but progress is starting to be made. So is that your emphasis right now, guys? Are you doing the corn? The beans are done, and now you're doing the corn?
Yeah, we're done with our soybeans. And I would have to say that, you know, as long as I've been farming, to when you say earliest ever, that's a tall statement, but I think this may be the earliest we were ever done with soybeans. We have started corn, and the corn is dried down just in a phenomenal way. And so every day of the last 3 or 4 days, I'm amazed that if I travel any distance, 4 or 5 miles, just to see the corn it's coming out at a very, very fast pace. And I think it'll be the earliest end to the corn harvest, at least for Northern Illinois, that we've ever seen.
Interesting. Now I'm assuming that the drought conditions and the dry conditions, we haven't had measurable rain in over 2 months. Is that part of the reason for the early harvest?
Yes, because partly with excess heat and lack of moisture, a lot of the crop has matured much faster than what's normally seen in this area. So our harvest started maybe 2 to 3 weeks earlier due to excessive heat and lack of rain. That is one of the driving factors of why the crop is drying down very quickly.
How have the dry conditions affected your yield? Do you have any numbers on that yet? It's too early to tell, probably for corn. Has it affected what your outputs are per acre?
It's a good question. So during the growing season, during the summer, everybody tries to guess the yield. And we've always been the type that we don't guess our numbers or estimate our numbers until we actually pick it. So this year, our soybean yields have been about average, to a little bit better than expected. And then our corn yields have been surprisingly very strong. We're maybe a third to a halfway through our corn harvest now. So a little too early to tell, but overall, we're very pleased with the corn yields. We're not devastated, so to speak. So corn yields right now are around average. So we're feeling very happy about that.
It seems to me that when we did get rain this summer, it came at the right times. Maybe when the pods were setting on the soybeans, when the ears were starting to fill out for the corn, is that true, or is that just my imagination that it seemed to come at opportune times for the farmer?
I would rate it your imagination a little bit. we had a rain in the first week of August. That's the last pretty much drop of rain we've had, other than a couple of tenths one night. And you always need, particularly for soybeans, you need some rain in August to fill the pods out and do all that. Also in corn, it always helps to have rain up to the 1st of September so that the ears fill and the kernels, you know, don't prematurely dry down. So I would, and as Seth said, surprisingly, our corn yields are excellent. So
good.
Doesn't seem to have affected corn. I think it did affect the soybeans, though.
Okay, interesting. Now, a question for you, and I checked the United States Department of Agriculture crop yields for Stevenson County last year and discovered that Stevenson County produced almost 35 million bushels of corn, 5 million bushels of beans. Where does all this go? Where does it end up? And my granddaughter would say, oh, Grandpa, it ends up in steel bins on the farm. But where's this crop that you raise? Where's it? What's its destination?
In Stevenson County, a majority of our grain would go towards ethanol production at in Lena, Illinois, to Atkins Energy. A byproduct of the ethanol would be distiller's grain, which gets then fed to livestock farms, to hog farms and cattle farms. Majority of our soybeans around here, some go to the river, to river terminals. They'll go on barges and they'll go south to the Gulf, and those get exported for international sales. Other soybeans could be put on rail terminals. And once they get on a rail, as a farmer, honestly, I don't know where it goes from there. Mm-hmm. It gets on the rail, and that's all I know.
It could go to food processing. It could go to export. You're not sure where it ends up.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The question I always have is, corn, yours goes to the ethanol plant, but those who are not sending their corn to the ethanol plant, where is that going to go? Is that going to go down the river? Is that going to go down to the Gulf eventually for export?
Locally, our corn, if it does not go to the ethanol plant, would go towards livestock feed.
Livestock feed.
So chicken feed, hog feed, and cattle feed.
Okay, gotcha. How have the low river levels affected anything that you have been doing with your harvest? Does that affect you at all, or are you pretty much immune? You know, the Illinois and Mississippi River levels are low, and barges aren't running as full and or as many as they have in the past. Does that affect how grain gets marketed from Stevenson County to Point South?
Yes, when that happens, it slows everything down. The reverse also happens. When we were ready to start delivering soybeans in July, they had excessive rain in Minnesota and north of here, and the river levels were actually, they flooded the Savannah location out, and they were closed for 2 or 3 weeks. We had beans to deliver. We wanted to deliver them, but they were closed.
Couldn't get them delivered.
Because the river was too high. Now, the reverse is kind of happening, and it slows the movement all the way down to the Gulf, and pretty much anything that is exported goes down the Mississippi and out from the Gulf port in Louisiana down there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to return to the weather here for a second. And one of the things, Brian and Seth are my cousins, listeners, and in case you haven't figured out my last name, that we're probably related. But I know growing up on the farm that farming was a very cyclical operation. You have dry years, you have wet years, and it just, that's just the way farming worked. I assume that's still the case, but have you noticed any long-term changes in weather patterns since you've been farming, Brian and Seth, since you picked up your farming activities here in the last 20, 25 years?
Because of my age, yes. I've been a slow acceptor of the word climate change. You know, it says, well, it's always hot, it's always cold, we have extremes. But in my career of farming, I've noted that the rain events are bigger, they're more dramatic, they're more sporadic. You'll get a lot of rain at one time and nothing at another time. And we get a lot of very large, 2-inch, 3-inch, doesn't happen every year. But, when I first came back to the farm, we had this field that lays adjacent to Yellow Creek, which flows through Freeport, Illinois. And that was absolutely our best field. When we wanted to produce all the corn we could, that's where we went. Over time, particularly in the last 20 years, almost every year, 8 out of 10, that field floods and we get a mediocre crop off of it. Totally opposite of the 1970s. So yes, I've acknowledged that there's a lot of differences and it's just hard to wrap your head around.
Well, and I was going to ask you, and you've already partly answered the question, Brian, and maybe Seth, you've got some thoughts here too. Have those kinds of changes influenced the ways in which you farmed or what you're doing? You mentioned you don't put, you can't rely on that bottom ground down by Yellow Creek like you used to for your good yield crops. Has it changed how you farm in any other ways?
Yes, I think so. From the standpoint of planting, maybe not so much with harvest, but the windows to get acceptable dryness or tillage when you can, the days you can be in the field has gotten less. So you have to be more prepared. You have to have bigger planters. When you get the 2 or 3 day window, you got to put it in as fast as you can. I mean, you always did, but now the intensity to, because you just seem to have less days to do the work.
And the same thing with harvest. On the same note, we've been very fortunate. Some of the other days said, oh, we've had beautiful weather for harvest. Isn't that great? And I say, well, yes, it's great. But even though we've had wonderful weather, it's difficult to take a day off because the last few years we've gotten snowfall in late October, early November. And if we don't get it done and then snow's on the crop, then we feel like we made a mistake. So you, there's urgency at harvest time also.
So it's a, there's a go, go, go. There's a sense of urgency about everything that you're doing.
As the old saying goes, you have to make hay when the sun shines.
Right.
So even though we're not growing hay, we still work as much as we can when the weather permits.
Well said. Once you get the crop out, and you've gotten to talk about this a little bit too, once you get the crop out this fall, what are you going to try to get done in your fields before spring? I know it, it's a busy time after the crop's out. You're fixing your machinery. You're getting ready for the spring activities. Do you try to get go over the fields and do some more things to prepare them for spring?
In the fall, we'll do some fertilizer applications. We will also do some field cleanup work, maybe clean up some old fence rows or remove some old scrub trees that are in the way. So yes, there's a long list of projects to do before snow actually comes.
And then you can sit back and maybe put your feet up for a week or two before you have at it again after the first of the year, start getting ready for the spring activities.
And then actually, as far as getting ready for the spring, oftentimes in December, we're planning next year's seed decisions, next year's fertilizer decisions. So we are meeting with agronomists to try to make some of those decisions for the spring. Because if we wait until, say, April or May, by then, you know, the seed might not be available or the fertilizer cost might go up.
I want to ask you, too, a little bit about, it's so different from when our fathers were farming, Brian, and your grandfather was farming. How many times we'd pass over a field before we would get it ready to plant or even after the crop was out, how many times we'd go over it. And we, farmers today have really cut down on the number of passes they've made over fields and primarily as a way to control your input costs. But are you doing no-till? I imagine you are. How much of what you do is no-till?
Good question. So, yes, we are. Historically, after you would harvest the crop, you might plow the fields in the fall. You might then work the fields in the spring with the field cultivator or field finisher. However, in the last 15 years, we've transitioned to no-till, meaning there is no tillage done on the field, and we would plant directly into the bare field next year. Or we've also adopted a practice known as strip till, where we apply fertilizer in a small strip. And we will do that in the fall, say in October or November. We would then come back in the spring and we would plant directly on that strip. So think about an organism being right next to the food source. That's kind of what we've adopted. But yes, you're absolutely right. We're doing less and less passes from an efficiency standpoint and from a yield standpoint, we're able to get as much yield or more yield with less passes.
Interesting. The strip fertilizing or whatever you call, is that what you call it?
Strip till.
Not only do you save on the amount of fertilizer you're using, but you're also not encouraging the weeds to grow.
Correct. And historically, you might broadcast the fertilizer or spread it randomly in different areas across a large area. But now we've condensed it to a small strip and we're placing the seed directly on the strip.
Interesting. And Brian and Seth, I've been in one of your combines. It's been a few years, but I've been in your combines when you've been harvesting corn. The new equipment today is able to handle that kind of technology and preciseness in the field in terms of where you lay down the fertilizer. You know from your soil, from your yields in the when you read it in the combine, how much, what part of the field needs more fertilizer next year, and what part of the field is doing pretty well. And that's got to be a huge assist to you folks in farming to have that kind of technology available to you as you harvest your crop and see it reading out on the screens in the combine.
Yes, and actually every pass that we make, we try to make a recording of what product we applied, where we applied it, how much we applied. And when it comes time to harvest, if there are good areas in the field, we look back and we look at our records of what we did and why it was good. Or conversely, if the yield is not great, we look back and say, well, geez, did we miss a little fertilizer here or did somebody screw up? So yes, we have records of everything across every acre. That's the goal.
Brian, our fathers years ago began, were picking corn by hand. I remember them telling the stories about how they'd be lucky to get two or three wagon fulls maybe in a day. And now you go through 1,000 acres of corn in a day. What kind of changes do you see down the road? You've seen a lot. Our father saw a lot of change from hand-picking corn to combines with GPS and computer-controlled steering. What do you think's coming down the road in the next 50 years, Brian? Any guesses what your ancestors will be doing when they're farming this land 50 years from now?
Well, sometimes when you get older, it's hard to imagine because you've seen 40 or 50 years of progress, but there's several things on the horizon. There's autonomous tractors, robotic tractors. So in other words, the tractor drives itself. There's no person on the tractor, though. Those things are here already. I can't really imagine working with that, but it's not widely adopted, but they're out there. They're at the Farm Progress Show and everything else. And the other thing that is a little perplexing or whatever, but there's a new thing called artificial intelligence. And it's in all sectors, all businesses. How it will play out in agriculture, I'm not sure, but I think that's going to accelerate a lot of practices and changes because the AI can consolidate 10 years into 1 year or maybe a couple of days. Seth knows a lot more about this than I do, but development of a herbicide sometimes takes 8 to 9 years before they can bring it to market. With AI, I think that could be condensed to a 8 year period could be condensed to 1 or 2.
Wow.
Seed. They keep testing seed and keep coming up with new varieties. And sometimes it takes them 3 or 4 years of testing before they settle on one thing. That's going to be consolidated down to 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the progress is just, I don't know. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth, any visions into the future you might have for farming? By the way, Brian, I don't know if I'd get in a driverless car, let alone a driverless tractor, and ride along. But Seth, what do you see?
I don't have any projections for the future, but just looking back at the past, farmers sometimes are maybe slow to adopt technology because, well, my father always did it this way, so that's what we're going to do, or that's the way we've always done it. I just look back at auto steer 20 years ago when guidance systems became available. Many farmers would say, "Well, I don't need to. I don't need that. I can still steer by hand." But over time, once a farmer has an auto steering tractor, they have less stress at the end of the day. They're operating maybe a couple hours longer because they're less tired, and they're doing a better job at it. So they're getting more yield. They have more energy at the end of the day. They're getting more acres done by adopting that technology. So it only took, 15 or 20 years for many, many operators to finally acknowledge that. But going forward, I don't know what the future will hold.
We'll have to wait and see. I've noticed over the years, I think farmers have been on the front end of technology much more than some other parts of our society. For example, I remember when farmers were using personal computers to check weather and markets and prices and Board of Exchange, prices for their commodities, and had personal computers using them before we started using them in town, so to speak, and that the GPS for all kinds of navigations that you use with your combine and with your equipment, that was around before we started using it on cars and other means of transportation for the non-farmers. So I think farmers ought to be given credit for being at the front end of a lot of technology before the rest of us figured out how to use it for what we'd like to use it for.
Fair point. Knowing that oftentimes there's new things that come out and some farmers are slow to adopt, and every year we try to try something new on our acres, a little something here, a little something there, because if we're not adopting something new, then we might be, quote, behind a few years from now. So,
Seth, Brian, I want to thank both of you for your time this morning. The sun's shining, and we've got to get out there and make that hay, Seth, while it's going. Do you have any final words, Seth or Brian, for our listeners? We sure appreciated your time this morning, helping us understand a little bit more about farming and the fall harvest and some of what you deal with. A final word for our listeners?
I guess thanks for taking the time to meet with us and learn a little bit more about agriculture in Northwestern Illinois.
And we'll see you at the next family reunion.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Seth. Thanks, Brian. Thank you for listening, everyone. Besides these extended interviews, which are available every Tuesday at noon on your favorite streaming platform, freepod.org or WNIJ out of DeKalb, I invite you to tune into our regular weekly newscast for the local news you've been missing, which drops every Thursday at noon. As always, we'd like to remind you that FreePod couldn't come to you without the help of many local supporters. We're especially appreciative for the Mass Communications Department at Highland Community College for producing this podcast, as well as our many liaisons and reporters for the time they volunteer to bring the news to you. Thank you, Highland and Team FreePod. Once again, I'm FreePod host Alan Wenzel. Until next time, thanks for listening and have a good week.